I must say we have been waiting for some of you to be here. The minister arrived yet about, I found him here, probably 9 o'clock was already here. Yes. Minister, welcome with your delegation. Let me just take this opportunity to thank you for bringing almost everybody that is within the family of National Treasury. Their voices of gender equality. From my right, but that's not the subject for discussion for today. We know that you've been very, very busy, Minister. You've been shuttling and globetrotting on behalf of our country, handling very difficult subjects out there. Obviously, you've got the support of Parliament on what you do on behalf of government. So just want to thank you for making time, setting time aside to be with us once more. Secondly, let me take this opportunity to congratulate our new Director General, Lungisa. I remember some years ago, he used to be very, very strict in terms of dealing with the provincial fiscuses and so on and so forth. Now that he has been given and assigned other bigger responsibilities, I think we are certain that he'll live up to the task. Congratulations, Lungisa Fuzile. Let me also welcome the commissioner and his team from the SARS. We're looking forward to engage with your presentations. Honorable members, I think we've got distinguished guests from the media. I must say you are also welcomed into our briefings by National Treasury on the annual strategic plan. We will first take that presentation, and later on it will be followed by the annual strategic plans of the South African Revenue Services, SARS. And I hope we'll be able to manage time quite efficiently so that we can do justice to the presentations. I have received a number of apologies. I must just indicate so that it is on record. Honorable Dr. George, he has indicated to me that he's got other party commitments. And Honorable Luyenge is on his way, but I think his flight is delayed. And Honorable Mthethwa. And I think there's also an apology from Honorable Swart. There are two Swart in this committee. Oh, okay, fine. You've decided to appear. No, thank you for changing your mind or rescheduling your program to accommodate this very important presentation. Honorable Minister, I think at this point in time, I would therefore leave the committee and ourselves in your good and capable hands to give us a direction on how you wish to lead the presentations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Members. I'll make a few introductory remarks and then pass the baton to the new sixpence sitting next to me. Some of us haven't seen the sixpence, I suppose, but it's a good reference. Thank you very much for your kind remarks. I also wanted to introduce the new Director, or incoming Director General of the Treasury, Mr. Lungisa Fuzile, whom you have met in a different capacity before. Let me also explain the absence of our Deputy Minister, Nene, he had a bereavement in the family and as a result had to go to KwaZulu-Natal. So apologies on his behalf. The few introductory remarks that I wish to make are the following. The first is, in the kind of gloomy economic environment that we live in globally, we tend to forget that there are good things happening in South Africa. So whilst much of the developed world has growth of less than 3%, in South Africa we still are moving in the right direction unless something untoward happens, and we'll still hopefully achieve the 3.4% growth that we're talking about. Employment has been growing, and you'll see in the slides in a moment, over 200,000 jobs created in the first quarter of this year compared to the last quarter of last year. Although we will all concede that that pace of employment creation is certainly inadequate in the face of the challenge of creating 5 million jobs by 2020. Globally, the world still, as the DG will take you through, it still looks pretty uncertain. And that's why we should be appreciative of the fact that our own economy is on a reasonably steady footing, and nothing is happening in our economy of an extraordinary nature that we need to be concerned about. However, for many months now, indeed for almost a year, we've been concerned about the sovereign risk in Europe, about the stability of their banking system, about the slower growth in the U.S., the data that's emerging from there, and then more recently the increasing potential for inflation impacting negatively in countries such as China and India, who are also important trading partners for ourselves as well. And those uncertainties then give rise to, if you like, a certain amount of gloom globally. And the longer they last, the more uncertainty they create. However, it would appear that political problems in many of those environments make it impossible for governments in those geographic areas to resolve their problems sooner rather than later, so that at least those uncertainties are actually removed. On the positive side, though, Africa is reflecting some of the fastest-growing economies in the globe, although off a very low base. Africa has certainly become recognized, sometimes slowly in some fora, as the new pole of growth and demand. And within the context of what we now call multipolarity, which is a situation in which we look at many more countries or regions as sources of growth and demand and as locomotives for drawing the global economy forward, Africa in the next 5 to 10 years will become more and more prominent as we go ahead of the present. It's also a fact of life that the world itself is going through an important transition where the global growth of around 6% or 5.5% is pulled through largely now by developing and emerging economies and not the developed economies. And as we go again into the next 5 to 10 years, that becomes the more permanent feature of global growth as well. But coming back home, if we are to give real impetus to the new growth path, if we are to really create the 5 million jobs, then quite clearly there are a number of things that we as South Africans need to approach with a greater sense of urgency and determination. Amongst them is, how do we give greater impetus to growth itself? Secondly, how do we change the quality of growth so that it becomes more inclusive, meaning the beneficiary should not be a small elite, but indeed all of our people find themselves to be the beneficiaries of that growth. But thirdly, we need to, with a greater sense of urgency, undertake some of the microeconomic reforms that we're well aware act as bottlenecks in our economy, such as our logistics systems. And we have still too many people in the mining industry, for example, complaining that the stuff that they dig out can't be taken quickly enough or in the quantities that they require to the ports in order that they may be exported or beneficiated before they are exported. So those are some of the challenges that we need to take on. But an important challenge for us in the present circumstances is how do we build greater confidence amongst our economic players in South Africa so that they would see it as part of a good business exercise to invest more of their surplus cash in our economy. Like companies elsewhere in the world, South African companies have a fair amount of surplus cash which they are not investing. And one of the tasks that all of us have is to break this confidence barrier to ensure that there is, in fact, this bolder approach to investment, because it is investment that creates jobs. It's investment that either grows or creates new businesses, and it's investment, ultimately, that will grow economies as well. So that's one set of issues, Chairperson, that we need to get an opportunity to debate, and the DG will take you through some of those elements as well. Secondly, the elections more recently have demonstrated that our local government system requires to be strengthened in more ways than one, and that our delivery systems require upgrading, if you like, in order that the local government has the capacity to deliver services more effectively to our people. And that, again, during the course of this year, I hope we have more opportunities to engage with you, but also to review some of the things that we do in order that we can better support municipalities in the responsibilities that they have. You will also see from the Director General that we still are running a sound fiscal ship, that the kind of fiscal consolidation that we are approaching in a fairly balanced way in South Africa is still, I think, the most responsible and correct way of doing things. But we do need to be aware that given the crises elsewhere and the kind of risks that the financial markets see elsewhere in the world, there is a sterner look at the manner in which we will be looking at and managing our own expenditure. And in that sense, we as South Africans need to be able to be a lot more mindful of the importance of taking a very balanced but careful approach to how we spend money and the extent to which we borrow in order to spend money. And more importantly, that the borrowing should be for investment purposes and not for consumption purposes. Linked to that is to continue in the course of this year work on the expenditure side, with a greater emphasis on reprioritizing expenditure in order to ensure that it's the priorities that get the money and not projects and programs that do not fit into the priorities. In respect of procurement, the issues of supply chain mismanagement and allegations of corruption have been fairly severe from all quarters in South Africa. And we've said that over the past 2 years, we've taken a number of measures to address this particular question. The Accountant General, in the next 24 hours, will release a circular which will now give expression to some of the things that we've said that we would do in the budget. And because procurement is such an important part of the expenditure of the state, and that is of taxpayers' money, the money that the Commissioner and his 15,000 colleagues collect dutifully from the taxpayers of South Africa, we need to ensure that our supply chain processes are as watertight and as accountable as they can be. So the regulation that will be issued by the Accountant General will cover national and provincial governments, constitutional institutions, Schedule 3A and 3C public entities. And the key issues that these regulations will address, amongst others, will be, firstly, that departments will be required to submit advanced tender programs. So in other words, don't just get up one morning and decide you're going to issue a tender. You need to have a tender program for the financial year, and that tender program for amounts exceeding 500,000 rand must be submitted to, for example, all the provincial treasuries or national treasury, and that a monitoring mechanism will be developed by the national treasury over all of these tenders. Secondly, in the interest of transparency, the names of all bidders that submit bids will be published on the relevant department's website. Thirdly, bidders will be required to disclose particulars of all directors and key officials of the companies involved. This will enable departments to verify whether any directors or officials are in the service of the state and whether they had been previously restricted from doing business with the state or are linked to previously restricted suppliers as well. The first list of just over 100 individuals or entities that the state should not be dealing with in the future has also been recently published on our website. The requirement that awards are published will be strengthened by requiring that specific information of successful bids must be published so that the public can have access to it. Information will include contact numbers and description, name of successful bidders, preferences claimed, contract prices, and other relevant details. There will be a limit to variations of the original contract or aspects thereof, which is an important control mechanism that we need to put in place. So that's one example, Chairperson, of delivering on the undertakings that we've given. My last point is in relation to the International Monetary Fund. This has been in the news quite a bit recently, and I thought it important that Parliament should be briefed on what is going on. We are all aware of the fact that the former Managing Director of the IMF, Mr. Strauss Kahn, resigned as a result of certain allegations that have been made against him, which have to be tested in court. That opened up the race for the position of managing director. Now, for the last, 40 years or more, the traditional understanding was that the head of the IMF would come from a European country and the head of the World Bank would come from the United States of America. And that any time there's a vacancy, that vacancy will be filled on that basis. For some years now, developing countries in particular have been demanding that these international financial institutions democratize themselves and that they meet the requirements of the 21st century, if you like, in terms of transparency and other issues. This came to a head, and there have been any number of studies, both within the World Bank and in the IMF, of what are these governance transformations that need to occur within the two institutions. In September 2009, when leaders of the G20, including President Zuma, met in Pittsburgh in the United States, they issued a communique which, for the first time, agreed on the following. It's a long paragraph, so I'm not going to read all of it, but I want to quote from it just to show you where some of us are coming from. Paragraph 21 of that communique says, "Modernizing the IMF's governance is a core element of our effort to improve the IMF's credibility, legitimacy, and effectiveness." And then it goes on to the IMF should remain a quota-based organization, which is another contested area, about who is allocated what share of the quotas, because that then determines what kind of vote you have. And currently, there's some interesting dynamics that are emerging, as a result of which you're now finding that amongst the developing countries, there's a distinction between what are called dynamic emerging markets and developing countries, the rest, so to speak. But this paragraph goes on to say that, I'm just trying to get to the right point, amongst the changes that need to be made will be the size of any increase in IMF quota, which will have a bearing on the ability to facilitate change in quota shares, the size and composition of the executive board, ways of enhancing the board's effectiveness, and the fund governor's involvement in the strategic oversight of the IMF. Staff diversity should be enhanced. In other words, there should be more people from more parts of the world and with diverse if you like, mindset and philosophical background as well. This is the key part. As part of a comprehensive reform package, we agree that the heads and senior leadership of all international institutions should be appointed through an open, transparent, and merit-based process. In other words, it's no longer part of the 20th century deal about what the U.S. does and what Europe does. You must urgently implement the package of the IMF quota and voice reforms agreed in April 2008, so don't worry about that. So here was a commitment from the G20 leaders that the appointments of the heads of these institutions, or the senior leadership of the institutions, should happen through an open, transparent, and merit-based process. Now, the committee will be very aware that even before Mr. Strauss-Kahn resigned, some individuals within the European context said that the head of the IMF should be a European. Many developing countries were both disappointed and dismayed by what we heard, because we thought this was the agreement that we had reached within the G20. And as a result, the BRICS countries have issued a statement last week asking that these principles be implemented in the choice of the managing director. Now, that process is still at play. If there are questions on that, we can take that later. But I think it's important for us to, just as much as we've democratized South Africa, to ensure that we also be active players in democratizing international institutions, so that the voices of developing countries are heard in these important processes as well. So let me end there, Chairperson, and ask the Director General to take you through the presentation, and then we'll be available for any questions and comments that you have.
Thank you very much, Minister, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members. Perhaps it would be appropriate at this point in time to just run through the list of officials from the Treasury who are present here today. We've got all the Deputy Directors General from the Treasury except two, who are female and black, and the two of them, one for physiological reasons couldn't travel, and the other one is abroad doing some work. The people who are here are just the names, I'll leave the titles: Andrew Donaldson, Freeman Nomvalo, the Accountant General, Kun Kruger, Marion Binamtembu, Kenneth Brown, Johan Redlinghuis, Matthew Simmons, Ishmael Momoniat, Neil Cole, representing one of the DDGs, who are not here, Ghulam Abubakar. We've got the Chief Finance Officer as well, and our communications team under the leadership of Mr. Skakan. The National Treasury derives its mandate and the objectives that it prosecutes from Chapter 13 of the Constitution, but also reinforced by certain provisions in the Public Finance Management Act and other pieces of legislation, such as the Municipal Finance Management Act and the Banks Act. The aims of the department, in broad terms, include developing a fiscal policy framework and coordinating macroeconomic policy, preparing a sound and sustainable national budget and equitable division of resources, which happens annually, and equitably and efficiently raising fiscal revenue while enhancing efficiency and competitiveness of the South African economy. Also, it's about sustainably managing and making effective use of government financial assets and liabilities, and promoting improved financial accountability and enforcing effective financial management. And it will become clearer how we achieve these objectives. within the context of the government's outcomes approach, we now pursue these objectives of the National Treasury. Whilst the work of the National Treasury in many ways is cross-cutting, but there are three of the 12 outcomes that we contribute directly to. The first of these is decent employment through inclusive economic growth. Second one is the responsive, accountable, effective, and efficient local government. And the last one is an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. The minister has already indicated that there are a number of positives that need to be acknowledged, whilst, of course, highlighting the risks, as I shall do just now. Among the positives, the one is the fact that our economy has been growing since it turned the corner post the global financial crisis. Whilst in the budget we projected that the economy would grow at 3.4% in this calendar year, already some analysts, including the South African Reserve Bank, have started to talk about the possibility that growth might exceed what we had projected in February. The SARB is looking at 3.7% for this year. And this is supported by the stable macroeconomic conditions which prevail here. Inflation remains moderate. It's within the target. Excuse me. In the last reading, it was at 4.2%, and that creates a basis, of course, for low interest rates, which are at 23-year lows at the moment. Employment is projected to grow annually at 1.8%, and StatsSA has already indicated that just over 200,000 people were engaged in employment as additional employees between the last quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year. South Africa is now a member of BRICS. Now, this presents a platform for South Africa to contribute towards shaping economic reform and taking a whole number of advantages and opportunities that would arise from that special relationship. We do know that in the last financial year, part of the improvement in the fiscal position that we had published in February from a deficit of 5.3% to 5 had been as a result of the positive contribution made by SARS by realizing a higher than originally targeted revenue collection in the order of 2 billion. Having noted those positives, there are some risks. Although inflation remains moderate currently at 4.2%, it's likely to inch a bit upwards, and the average for the full calendar year will be about 5.1%, still within target, and it's likely to touch the higher band of the inflation target range by 2012. We're all aware that rising fuel prices and the impact of food prices are beginning to bite. Because we're coming out of the global financial crisis, our fiscal position had deteriorated, although it's set to improve going forward, but we will continue to accumulate debt in the period ahead. And accordingly, debt service costs will tend to rise. Unemployment remains stubbornly high, and we experience, like many other parts in the emerging market world, some capital inflows which tend to lead to the strengthening and or the volatility of the currency. There are other global risks as well that are worth mentioning in this regard. Growth in Europe is somewhat weak, and Europe is still a significant trading partner of South Africa, and therefore that could hurt our exports and therefore the prospects for growth arising from that fund. Europe is yet to emerge and even deal decisively with the sovereign debt problems that arose predominantly from Southern Europe, countries like Greece and Ireland, and of course there are a range of banking risks that are on the horizon there. Some emerging market economies have started to experience inflation pressures, which, if they necessitate some tightening, could dampen the prospects for growth there, and therefore could affect us too. There are certain strategic programs of government that have been announced over a period of time, from the President's State of the Nation address through to the budget. The Treasury contributes towards some of these in terms of the business that it is involved in. Chief among these is employment creation. An announcement of the 9 billion jobs fund was made at the time of the budget, and this is intended to support the expansion of existing programs and to also pilot some innovative approaches to employment creation, with a special focus on opportunities for young people. We instituted a savings and expenditure reprioritization program, which saw us being able to recoup in the order of 30 billion in this year's budget, which has been taken away from programs or areas that are of lesser priority now and tunneled towards key priority areas. This will continue in the period ahead, and the focus is to ensure that within the existing envelope, it is possible to do more of the things that government has identified as priorities. The minister has already touched on the need to reform supply chain and to enforce compliance in this regard. The idea is to combat corruption and fraud in the public sector. Major reforms in the social security system and health financing are a subject of investigation in the period ahead. The aim is to explore sustainable funding models for these initiatives, and of course the first stages of implementing the national health insurance were announced in February, which include, amongst other things, the strengthening the public healthcare system through building of hospitals and other initiatives. Of course, again, the issue of employment, but now addressed more in a more focused way in terms of the paper that was published in February on the youth employment subsidy. Comments in this regard have been received, and the document is currently under review within the context of NEDLAC. Of course, we allocated substantial amounts of resources towards infrastructure, city planning, and development over the next 3 years. Quick overview of the structure and the composition of programs that fall within the Treasury vote. Some of the programs have not changed, but their numbers, if you look at the previous year's strategic plan, they have changed as a result of some reconfiguration of some of other programs. The administration program hasn't changed. For an example, it remains the same. Program 2 now comprises of different programs which were previously Program 6, that's economic analysis and forecasting, tax, financial regulation, and research. So those two divisions make up now Program 2 and previously Program 6. Program 3, which was previously Program 2, it's public finance and budget management. The composition of the programs within it have not changed, but the number has changed. Asset and liability management only the number has changed. Financial accounting and reporting, these are the two divisions that were previously programs 4 and 5. Program 6, international financial relations, previously it was part of program 6, now it's a standalone program. Civil and military pensions, contributions to funds, and other benefits, there has been no change to the program, but previously it was Program 8. And Program 8 now comprises of all the technical and management support development programs that have been run and were previously different parts of Treasury, but they are now under Program 8. Program 9 is revenue administration, was previously part of the transfers program, and 10 is financial intelligence and state security. Just on what these programs are about. Administration, it's about the functioning of the department. It's responsible for the overall strategic management and support of the department. Over the next 3 years, this program will seek to enhance the talent management program to ensure relevance to the needs of the department. It will continue the leadership development program to create a pool of senior management cadre from deputy director level so that from within the Treasury it will be possible to draw from these should vacancies at senior levels occur. It will implement the in-year monitoring tool that will improve financial management and reporting from 6 to 2 days so that we are able to get a handle of where our finances are at any given time. And it will develop ICT systems and services in support of the organizational objectives. And finally, it will implement automated registry where departmental information can be stored, managed, and accessed electronically. Maybe we're gravitating towards a paperless office environment in time. Program 2, economic analysis and forecasting, tax, and financial regulation and research. These two programs that are combined here provide specialist policy research, analysis, and advisory services in the areas of macroeconomic policy, microeconomic taxation, and financial sector, and regulatory reforms. Honorable members and chair would recall that there were a number of papers released with the budget and subsequent to that which had arisen from this area. A number of them are under discussion and comments have been received. Plans over the next 3 years include developing and maintaining economic forecasting models that facilitate sound policy making through in-depth economic analysis, including, of course, macroeconomic focus. Monitoring the exchange rate and exploring policy measures to ensure that its competitiveness, it's competitive. Also formulating and implementing annual tax proposals, which go through the parliamentary processes as expected, and producing a policy paper on a carbon tax for cabinet approval and submit such a proposal for next year's budget, but also explore policy measures to increase private savings. Now, again, under this program, consultations will be conducted with the view, ultimately, of implementing the proposals relating to the strengthening of the financial sector. A document titled "The Safer Financial Sector to Serve South Africa Better" was published with the budget, as I had indicated earlier on. But these programs will also publish a policy document with proposals on modernizing the framework for inward and outward investment, an important function indeed. And finally, this program, working with the next one, will explore models for financing national health insurance with steps towards its launch as announced in the budget. Program 3, which combines three divisions, provides analysis and advice on fiscal policy and public finances, intergovernmental financial relations, and expenditure planning and priorities. It manages the annual budget process and provides public finance management support. Now, the plans over the next 3 years are to establish a capital projects unit to evaluate options for investment in liquid fuel supply capacity, review solar park proposals, and conduct pre-feasibility review for major projects in water and transport sector areas, because the unit has already been established. I'm glad to announce that. The unit will also work with Program 2, as I've already indicated, on social security reform issues. They will introduce longer-term expenditure estimates for selected programs and entities in line with the guidelines that were published, of course, in the budget review. Because what we want to make sure is that not only do we know and understand the programs in the short or medium term, but the cost implications of some of those programs have got to be understood over the long term to ensure that we strike a good balance in terms of intergenerational equity. Programs will also monitor expenditure, in fact continue to monitor expenditure on a monthly and quarterly basis and provide analysis of expenditure trends. They will improve the budget process and provide information by government function. First steps at doing this were effected in this year's budget. The disaster management, the disaster funding grant has already been refined with the aim of improving the responsiveness of this funding mechanism. It doesn't help that sometimes people who were affected by droughts only receive the funding when they are already struggling with too much rain. The aim of these programs will be to extend the coverage of the consolidated account to include information on consolidated accounts and the borrowing of government, a broaden focus of overseas development assistance funding to include economic and rural development, employment creation, and public service delivery improvement. They will review the provincial and local government fiscal framework in line with national budget framework and policy objectives. And these will also be reviewed with the aim of improving their targeting or the targeting of resources in favor of poor geographical areas and pro-poor programs within overall government spending programs. And they will implement key local budget reforms to improve budget implementation and reporting. The fourth program, in terms of the new configuration, asset and liability management, over the next 3 years, we'll seek to ensure that there is prudent management of government's financial assets and liabilities. Honorable members and honorable chair will recall that I said that our debt is set to rise over the next couple of years, arising from the global financial crisis, and so will our debt service costs. This unit is responsible for managing this in a manner that ensures that they are sustainable. Plans over the next 3 years include financing government's borrowing requirement of about 575 billion, maintaining sound relations with investors through roadshows and enhanced dissemination of information, actively managing government's debt portfolio through buybacks and switch exchange programs to ensure that we never run into a refinancing risk program. And that becomes critically important given that our debt is likely to rise to just about 1.4 trillion or 39.4% of GDP over the next 3 years. This unit will also seek to maintain debt service costs as a percentage of GDP at sustainable levels, and we're looking at a range of between 2.6 and 2.9% of GDP over the next 3 years. It will optimize the use of public sector cash through broadening the coordination, thereby reducing borrowing costs. In this regard, we've got internal arrangements which involve not just all the two spheres of government, national government and provinces, but it also draws in some of the state-owned entities so that there are some internal borrowing and lending arrangements there at lower costs than the rates prevailing in the market. But this unit will also strengthen financial oversight and monitor the economic performance of development finance institutions that are critically important, especially in relation to infrastructure investment in a whole range of areas. Program 5, Financial Accounting and Reporting, combines two divisions, and over the next 3 years, these two divisions will seek to roll out strategic sourcing principles to 42 medium-capacity municipalities and introduce the strategic sourcing principles to 30 low-capacity municipalities. They will promulgate and implement revised preferential procurement regulations and monitor implementation of the revised preferential procurement regulation. They will review procurement legislation in consultation with relevant stakeholders, of course, and apply strategic sourcing methodologies to improve value for money in 32 transversal term contracts that are managed centrally. They will implement completed IFMS modules in identified departments. These are modules that have already been developed. Some of them have already been piloted successfully. Now the aim is to roll them out on a larger scale. They will issue treasury instructions as a step to enforce supply chain compliance and to counter fraud and corruption, as the minister has already indicated earlier in his opening remarks. Develop guidelines to strengthen the monitoring and oversight function of parliamentarians by providing the information necessary and the support as may be required from time to time. They will monitor improvements in financial management in national and provincial institutions and report to SCOPA and SCOF by August 2011. Implement financial management capacity or capability maturity assessment in selected municipalities and entities, and this assists in determining the pace at which various reforms can be taken up by these municipalities. Manage an academic support program, which has been very successful for chartered accountants and other accountants in government. We're looking at 17 participants in the current calendar year. Provide targeted support to priority departments and municipalities to improve financial management, as has been the case. Program 6, international financial relations, a single program or division that makes up this program, and its aim is to advance South Africa's economic interests through regular strategic analysis, engagement, and negotiations at financial and economic forums, and increase Africa's voice and improve South Africa's participation in international institutions. The minister referred to this in relation to, for example, the issue of the appointment of or selection of the MD of the IMF, International Monetary Fund. To promote regional economic integration in SADC and to strengthen economic links within Africa. Over the next 3 years, this program will finalize agreement on a new revenue-sharing formula in SACU, formulate proposals and establish regional infrastructure fund, increase shareholding in the African Development Bank to 6%, and part of the process is to increase South Africa's voice and shareholding within that institution. Promote and support development of African countries, facilitate engagement between regional and international financial institutions such as or forums as well, such as the G20, IMF, World Bank, and similar institutions. Program 8, which previously was part of Program 2, as honorable members would recall from earlier slides, the aim of this program is to promote public and private investment in infrastructure and public services by providing technical support for capital expenditure planning and PPPs, advice on financing alternatives for municipal development, and financial assistance for neighborhood development projects. This program has 6 sub-programs, including the New Jobs Fund, referred to earlier, which supports the creation of self-sustaining employment, and the Post-Disaster Recovery and Reconstruction Transfer, which deals with post-disaster recovery activities. Over the next 3 years, These technical support and development finance programs will seek to build project management capacity in government broadly, right across all three spheres, ensure improved infrastructure delivery through the implementation of infrastructure delivery improvement programs. In this regard, 36 technical assistants, four in each province, will be employed and deployed. And we know that the problems of underspending of infrastructure allocations, both at provincial and municipal level, and to some degree at national, by the way, have been plaguing us for some time. So these programs will also seek to support municipalities in planning and implementing integrated neighborhood development programs in townships, and develop project appraisal methodology for capital and infrastructure projects. Now, the remaining programs report directly to Parliament. I can go back to them. They relate to, you know, pensions, some of them, as you would recall, SARS, and the Financial Intelligence Center, and SARS. Just in summary, I hope this is visible. This is the summary of the resource plan for the Treasury. Critically, the most important lines, I would say, are those program lines. As you can see, how the administration allocations increase between the 2 years, economic policy, tax, financial regulation, and research. In other words, just the summary of all the programs. But perhaps the most important line for purposes of Parliament, of the committee today, is that operational budget line, which shows that for 2011-12, the budget for the Treasury is 1.5 billion. To be precise, 1,460,894,000, as it's set out there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Director General Longisa. Honorable members, I think we, as I've said earlier on, that we'll take this as a first presentation, interact with it before we move to the next presentation. Over to you. Honorable Des Van Rooyen, followed by, I've forgotten your name. You've not been around this committee for quite some time. I know you are still swamped. Okay. Honorable Gordon Wolf will be the third. In Madlamini, you'll be followed by Honorable Spidla. When and that?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My sincere apology for arriving late. The earlier notice was saying good hope, so I was so relaxed there, thinking that we are coming that fast, but it's fine. So let me echo, maybe let me start by welcoming the presentation, both from the minister as well as our new DG, and echo, of course, your welcoming note on behalf of the committee to the new DG. There are some few areas that I wanted to touch on. Firstly, my comment or maybe my observation on the submission made by the minister around the current contestation for IMF MD position. I've been observing with interest the way Europe is approaching this process, and I think there are one or two things that we need to learn as emerging markets or maybe developing countries from Europe. I mean, the lobbying aspect of their candidate is not something that is left to individuals. It's owned up by the government of the respective countries concerned. And that's not the sense that I'm having the way we do things, more especially starting from here at home. I think the only voice that has been emerging of late about obviously, the candidate from Africa as a continent, it has been from the ministry, and I don't think that's enough. We need to take up this thing as a collective battle because, I mean, from where I am, Chair, this is quite a strategic move, and it is obviously going to have an effect on how do we build the confidence of investors, I mean, into our continent. And I think really it might be necessary for us to look at it differently. As we are speaking now, I mean, the Minister of Finance of France is in Brazil, and obviously Africa is also targeted. Lobbying specifically, I mean, for that's how serious they take these things, you know. And I think that seriousness from where I am, maybe it's because I'm not in these processes, but from where I am, I don't get the sense that we are treating this particular development seriously as they do. And maybe that's something that the minister must take back to the cabinet and ensure that collectively we come out with one voice as South Africa on this issue. And Chair, coming to the presentation by the DG, in our economic outlook, DG, I'm just trying to check with your understanding if the increasing wage bill is not a factor that we need to look at as a risk. If we have to speak about all these risk factors that might have a negative impact to our inflation rate. I am saying this because my understanding is that with an increasing wage bill, obviously, more income might imply that the demand might also be boosted, and that might result also to something else in as far as inflation is concerned. I know that our increases are obviously inflation indexed, but I just wanted to check, is it not from where we are, because the rate at which we are moving, if Botswana is able to accept 3%, I mean, we are accepting not less than that. If we are accepting times three of that, you know, is this not something that we need to regard as a threat, I mean, to our inflation targets? And, Chair, I think there was on another slide on the savings and expenditure prioritization. I just wanted to confirm if these savings, we are not referring to under expenditure. They are not saving as a result of under expenditure, because that would be very unfortunate. I mean, for us, I mean, to coin them as savings, and while we know that we are not doing good in other areas, hence we have these savings if it's because of under expenditure. And the Chair, maybe moving to my last question. I'm very excited to realize that there is an acknowledgement of ODA funding. And I mean, from our side, I think as a committee, we need to appreciate this, because we haven't heard much around the ODA funding, more especially around the impact of ODA funding into our developmental agenda as a country. And I hope that it says to us, then since this is included in our strategic plan, we have an opportunity now to interrogate thoroughly the impact of ODA funding, I mean, to our developmental agenda. That simply says we'll get more information, because currently I don't think we have enough information, more especially the Standing Committee on Finance, around this ODA funding. And lastly, Chair, the review of equitable share, Chair, a welcomed exercise, and it's long overdue. Now, what I wanted to check, looking at your plan, the strategic plan, it's very clear that it's only in 2013 and 14 financial year that we'll start to use data from census that will be conducted this year. That will obviously assist us in dealing with issues of the review of equitable share. And that simply says we might realize the effect of this intervention at a very later stage. Now, I will tell you why I'm asking this question. Currently, local government is paying. And in the end, I think it's because of our funding model. And at the center of this model is the equitable share. Now, I don't know is there any other way that we can do to expedite this long overdue process, to bring it forward a bit, so as we can start realizing the effect of this intervention quite earlier, as unlike as projected in the strategic plan of the minister. Thank you, Chair.
Steve, Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson, and may I also congratulate the new DG, Mr. Fuzile, and wish you well with your new post.
you have our support as much as possible. Chair, one or two of the aspects my colleague has already touched on the issue of the increase in wage bill is one issue that I wanted to raise, and just on the fiscal implications of that. And then secondly, the Minister referred in the budget to fiscal principles that we'd be discussing. And Chair, my apologies if I raise an issue that has already been covered. My apologies for being out. But the issue of the fiscal principles dealing with the deficit and state debt levels, maybe we can get an indication of the progress in that regard. And the Minister also referred to international events. Would you give an indication of the impact of the North African events, if one has a regard, for example, to the fuel price and the inflationary pressures resulting from that? And then, Chair, the Minister also referred to the issue of corruption and the measures to address corruption, which we are all very aware of that. Now, we all know we have, the Minister referred to a number of regulations that will be passed in this regard to deal with mismanagement, supply chain corruption. To what degree will we be able to access information that arises from this? For example, the Minister states the regulations will address, departments will have to submit advanced tender programs to provincial and national treasuries. There'll be a monitoring mechanism. The bidders will be published. The bidders will disclose all directors, etc. Now, the reason I ask this, and Chair, you might rule me out of order, but I understand the NIA plays a role in this process from the Information Bill deliberations. An Information Bill might have an impact on us accessing that information, which may be declared classified. And if so, we need to know that at this stage, because obviously it has an impact on us as we are deliberating that bill, which is vastly different from the bill that the Cabinet considered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just also to add my voice of welcoming the new Director General, and I wish him well. I think if we achieve 80% of this strategic plan, South Africa will be a better place to live in a year from now. So I wish him very well, and I think I want to compliment him. I think it was a very practical strategic plan session this morning. Can I just echo what the Honourable Des van Rooyen said about the IMF? I think I want to support him there, and I think we really need to see some sort of effort from government in a whole, and maybe Parliament must take it up, and maybe the Chair can arrange that when Parliament sits, that we take some sort of action there with regard to our candidate. We've seen that there were about 213,000 new jobs in the last quarter and the first quarter of this year. I want to know whether we know how many of those jobs were created by the private sector. Then on SACU, I would like to know where we stand. When will it be concluded, the final agreements, and whether the Treasury is happy that we're not going to destabilize our neighboring countries or the SACU members for the wrong reasons. I want a democracy in Swaziland, don't understand me wrongly, but if you destabilize out of a fiscal point of view your neighbors, it's not good for us. And then finally, I've seen some negative media reports on the triple P envisaged for prisons in South Africa. I want to know where the Treasury stands with regard to that and whether they still support the triple P programs with regard to prisons. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I would like to thank the Treasury family for coming in, and we came late. We really apologize that the Minister came at 9 and then we came at half past 9, but it was scheduled for half past 9. I would like to touch on just one point from the Minister's submission, where he actually indicated to us as to how to create or to achieve the 5 million jobs. And he touched on the logistic part of it, which really created some pain to me, because what he has said, it's critical, but the bottom line is what are we doing about it, which is not coming out, where we find that the production from our mines, it gets delayed. That is very true. I come from KwaZulu-Natal. You'll find that especially the BEE ones, they are not even having the routes to come and what do they do when they load those products to the ships at the port? There is a problem with the entry, the access to the port, to make sure that their product gets delivered at the right time to the right place to their clients, so that at the end of the day they get something. So that is the problem, and I'm talking about Richards Bay here, which was the serious problem. So I would like to know as to how far is that problem, has it been sorted, because if those logistics are not being corrected, it's actually not helping us to create more jobs. And then with the DG's presentation, DG, welcome. This is the home. You will enjoy to be with us. Regarding your outcomes, decent employment through inclusive economic growth, you haven't mentioned anything about the training that is to be done by the National Treasury as one of your outcomes. You are a department that has got scarce resources within the country. You need economists, you need finance expertise, but there is nothing that is talking about the training program or the of those personnel, so as to ensure that because for the economy to grow, so you need the skilled person. You are saying that, which is true, but what are you going to do about that? When are you going to start setting a program to train the people that will assist us on the economic growth? Another one, Chair, the minister touch or even the DG touch on the us being a member of the BRIC. What are the benefits? What is the country going to benefit out of this? It's a relationship that we all appreciate indeed, but the Treasury, how do you see the benefits of us being a member of a BRIC? What are we going to benefit out of that? And the minister also indicated that when we do the borrowing, we need to make sure that we are doing it for the investment rather than for the consumption. Why are we having a rising in debt costs? Where is it coming from, the debt? What are we servicing? Are we servicing the loan? Was it not taken for the investment rather than the consumption? I just like to add to what the two honourable members said about the IMF. I'm jumping around. So, you know, if you look at how we handled the 2010, I am requesting that the minister, together with the chair, they actually take this message from us, the committee, that we are requesting our government to take this seriously and to make sure that we make the contribution for our candidate. I do remember that Africa as a whole is depending to South Africa. If South Africa is not leading, then we are letting down the whole SADC or the whole Africa. I think that's all, Chair, for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Congratulations, Mr. Longesa. Chairperson, I agree with the views that have been presented here by honourable members on the issue of IMF. To say that the decision of the G20 of 2008 must be implemented. But also, as South Africa, we are raising our hand to say we have an interest in that process, and our government must start mobilizing the continent and the other regions in relation to this decision. The second one, Chair, on the BRICS, Madlamin has partly covered my issues, but I want to take it further to ask whether, as a country, we have a plan to mobilize the business community to seize the opportunities that are created by this participation of South Africa in that group. And how are we planning to mobilize the other countries in the continent to what under one vision in terms of what we want as a country to achieve in that out of the participation in the BRICS. Chairperson, on program one in the strategic plan document, page 15, it says under minister and deputy minister, in terms of the assessment of the performances here, there's a system in place to assess the performances. But from this side, I think we do not have, or we don't know the system that you are going to use to assess the performance. If you can share with us so that when we play our role, we know exactly what we're looking for. Program two, Chairperson, there's a projection there on the expenditure on consultants of about 14%. I just want to get a clarity as to what informs that 14% increase there. Program six, one of the milestones for this financial year is to increase shareholding in the African Development Bank to 6%. Can we be clarified as to what is the situation currently? What is our share currently? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Sogoni. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I would like to join colleagues in congratulating the DG in his appointment. Madam Minister says no, you will enjoy working with the Finance Committee. I'm not sure if I can say the same for appropriation. She was speaking on behalf of finance. Okay. Chair, I think that unfortunately, some of us did not get all the documents. I'm just referring here to the threat plan. So we're depending on what we got, which is just the presentation. I notice here on the cover of the presentation, as the DG was also saying, that some of the legislation that some of the legislation that guide the department is Public Finance Management Act, PFMA and MFMA. And I don't know if up to now, for instance, and I don't see it clearly in plans that needs to be done in the next 3 years. The issue of PFMA has been there all over the years. I don't know if the department perhaps is satisfied with the implementation of PFMA up to now, and if so, I mean, if you don't think that I see in some of the issues that you're raising clearly that there are gaps, but there are other areas, for instance, where the PFMA, say in the section of the functions of Treasury towards the department. I'm not sure if this threat plan is really strong enough in terms of saying this is what we want to do over the next 5 years in terms of strengthening the department, let alone the provinces or what, with national departments. Because for me, if you look at
some of the reasons why they are underspending. And Honorable Van Rooyen is asking about the savings, whether are they savings in terms of people having done things better, or is it, or are we talking about underspending in another term? The way, for instance, they do things, the question that we keep on raising when they come to Parliament, for instance, issue of planning. I see here in the strategy planning, it is there. But I'm not sure if it is raised strongly enough, because it looks like, including the provinces, by the way, if you look at your division of revenue, many, many issues of that contribute to understanding relate to planning, the way we see them. And whether here is raised enough, I'm not sure. Chairperson, the area that I wanted to start with, and perhaps maybe the DG minister just preempted me, which was looking at the tenderization of, for the lack of a better term, I'll call it tenderization of national treasure. And the DG says two women who are not here, senior women. But are you satisfied about that kind of transformation, what you call DG, as well? My focus really will be on the on programs, you know. And one of the issues that perhaps one sees, well, I've raised the issue of public finance and budget management effectiveness. But the other area, Chairperson, is the issue of rollout in the slide number 16, plans, rollout strategic principles for the 42 municipalities, and what? Why are we choosing 42 medium capacity municipalities and 30 low capacity municipalities out of 283 municipalities? Who is going to look after the rest of those municipalities? On slide 17, Chairperson, maybe it's just a question of being jealousy. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, bullet 4, monitor improvement in financial management in national and provincial institutions and report to SCOPA and SCOF. I'm saying, maybe it's a question of being jealous, reporting to SCOF and to SCOPA. Appropriation? Yeah, you will protect me, Chairperson. So I'm saying, Chair, I just want to really to understand. Yes, I think the... No, that's all, Chair. Other questions have been raised by colleagues. Thanks. Thanks, colleagues, will allow the minister to probably start and allow the team from National Treasury to follow in terms of responding. You want to have? Okay. No. Let's continue, Minister. Aircon.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll distribute the questions so that everybody earns their salary this morning. On the question of the IMF, with several colleagues have raised. Thank you very much for your understanding and for your support. There's still some way to go during the month of June, so keep a vigilant eye on developments, and let us make our contribution to democratizing processes within key institutions. On the question of that Honorable Van Rooyen asked, on the risk of the increased wage bill to inflation. That is something that we have constantly communicated, that ultimately what we require in South Africa is an understanding that certainly in the public sector, we've got to balance the considerations of those who require, they think, wage increases in relation to inflationary pressures or cost of living pressures versus increasing employment within the public sector, particularly of frontline service delivery people as opposed to administrative staff. And on behalf of government, it's Minister Baloyi, Minister of Public Administration, who deals with this particular question. Each year when we budget, we try to create an envelope which caters both for the cost of living increases on the one hand, but also additional employment within government on the other hand. Over the past few years, that's been virtually wiped out entirely by the salary increases. And the OSDs have also put immense pressure, particularly on provincial budgets, as a result of which there too there's been compromising of certain lines of expenditure as well. But we hope that the kind of dialogue that's happening between government and the labor sector will result in a better understanding of this phenomenon, but also of the tighter fiscal environment in which we are operating. Remember that prior to the recession, the tax-GDP ratio was well over 28%. We're just over 25% now, and we're unlikely to get to 28% for a long time to come. And we have described the risks that we have in the global environment and the slower growth within the South African environment. The only way we can push up some of these things is if we widen the tax base, if we have more businesses paying tax or more individuals paying tax or creating more businesses that ultimately pay tax. And all of that is not happening at a rate which will sustain some of the things that we want to do. And that's the understanding that we ask for on this particular question. Let me ask Mr. Brown to consider the question on the equitable share, the savings and expenditure, Mr. Donaldson, and whether this is under expenditure. Mr. Swart, the fiscal guidelines, the DG, and Matthew Simmons will handle that. Yeah, but I want to just say on that particular question that this is a work in progress. There's been a fair amount of research done, and ultimately it would land on your tables in the form of a proposal that you need to consider. The corruption measures, I'll work with the Accountant General, but he can give the first answer on that question. The jobs that have been created, I'm not sure if somebody here can tell us how many of them were from the private sector, but I wait for the support team to do that. On SACU, Honorable Kurnoff, it certainly isn't the intention of South Africa to negatively contribute to the fiscal sustainability of our neighbors. Quite the contrary, South Africa plays a hugely supportive role in this regard. But what we have pointed out is that the current formula and way of doing things is not a sustainable way. Two of the SACU countries get over 60% of their current expenditure from the SACU revenue. We've now got the experience of the Great Recession, where we lost substantial amounts of revenue, which means that they lose a substantial amount in terms of the SACU pool distribution to their countries. And so the sooner we can have a more stable approach, which provides a buffer against phenomena such as the recession, the better. Whether we will get there soon enough is part of the challenge. And there are already some countries that are quite severely challenged in this regard and are not in very good shape at the moment. And ultimately, South Africa is the country everybody turns to. And we have our own limitations and challenges as well. The South African taxpayers will also ask the question, where are you spending our money? And how do we justify that kind of expenditure and so on? So that's certainly an area that we're very mindful of, and thank you for raising that. The PPP is on prisons. I imagine Mr. Donaldson will be the right man there. Honorable Dlamini, the logistics network, perhaps the DG can handle that. Training by National Treasury of economists, if you look at slide 10, they do in fact talk about talent management programs, but Marion can look at that. Mrs. Mbina. BRICS. What are the benefits? Well, we've just joined BRICS. The first benefit is of course, Africa's biggest economy being part of the BRICS, although we're not the population size of the others, nor the GDP size of the other countries that are members of BRICS. Secondly, the agreement signed by President Zuma and the other heads of state and government provide for a number of areas of cooperation on trade, on investment, on development finance institutions working with each other, on think tanks sharing research and ideas. And all of that, once it begins to get off the ground, will provide an immense boost and synergy with those countries. But we need to be also mindful of the fact that this is what we might call competitive cooperation. So we will work together, but they are our competitors at the same time. And that's where, Sibitla is out, but the question she raised about mobilizing the business community is an important one, because we can only take up the opportunities that are available if businesses and others in South Africa are entrepreneurial enough, are energetic enough, and are creative enough. And so the doors are partly open. I think it's for us to begin to seize the opportunities that come with that. There was a question about debt costs. The DG and his colleague can handle that. Honorable Sabita asked questions about Program 2. The DG might want to refer that to someone. And Program 6. The increase in shareholding, Mr. Cole, you can handle that. The Honorable Sogoni, we wait for your invitation. And we'll be more mindful about including you in our references, but thank you for raising that. The Accountant General will look at the PFMA. The DG will look at genderization. Mr. Brown will look at the 42 municipalities. That you referred to. So let me start with the DG, and then we can go to the other DDGs.
Thanks, Minister. Before
the DG, I just wanted to appeal to those who are going to respond to be mindful of the fact that we still have got another presentation to take. We should not disadvantage those who collect the revenue that we speak about, that we want to ensure that we reach all the strategic objectives of government, if their presentation is not well understood and properly supported, everything may come to naught. So I'm just saying, Mr. Brown, I didn't hear any question referred to Momiat, so Brown will have to be the one to be watched. Okay.
Usually, Honorable Chair, I also have the same reputation, but
It's my first day. Let me just see which questions I can cover. Some of them may even... Thanks, Mr. Zokun. Just let me start with the distinction between savings and understanding. The 30 billion that's referred to in the slide is at the start of the year, where cabinet led by the minister, or advised by the minister, looked at specific areas where cuts could be effected because the programs were no longer top priority relative to others, and therefore the resources were allocated. That's distinct from what you would have at the end of the year, where a department spends less than what was allocated and sometimes gets badly described as savings. Some of it could be, where maybe you find a cheaper way to procure whatever you had estimated would cost more, but this one is real savings, cuts from departments. I hope that helps. On the equitable share revisions, to the extent that StatsSA can give us the data from the census that they're going to conduct in October early, we would be better placed to use it. The problem is that it just takes time to process the volume of information that's collected through a census, because it's like counting everyone in every household. So that's the reason for the delay. We admit, by the way, and Mr. Brown and I had talked about this thing yesterday, that the 10-year interval between censuses will pose challenge for the revisions for these two formulas, especially at local government level, because the survey that's done in between does not produce good enough data to be used at local government level for planning and resource allocation purposes. If information can be available early, we would use it. If it's not available, it's almost impossible to do something about it. The fiscal guidelines, the minister has covered this. The initial step in terms of the principles was set out in the budget review. The aim is to elaborate this, draw lessons from other countries, and more importantly, find something that would work for South Africa and our circumstances. The information on supply chain about publishing in advance what people plan to procure if it's big, publishing names of contractors that government shouldn't do business with, it will be on websites. It will be available and accessible to everyone. It would therefore not be a subject of any classifications as may be contemplated in the bill that Mr. Swart was referring to. PPPs in prison, to the extent that we can still find properly structured PPPs in the area of building prisons, where the sharing of risks between the private sector and government is appropriate, the design of the facilities is not excessively expensive and delivers what we want at a good price, we remain committed to pursuing PPPs, even in relation to prisons. The logistics and transport issue, it is a challenge. In fact, I would add that the challenges do go beyond even that. I mean, in some areas, it's the licensing for water, access to energy, and so on. What is positive, at least, is that there is an awareness of it, of the problems that are posed by this, and to a certain degree, some of the investments that are made in the 800 billion that one referred to are intended to cover these areas, by the way, included in the investment program of government and state-owned entities are investments by the two biggest state-owned entities, and I mentioned that the problem of energy does arise for certain mines. Eskom makes up 36% of that 800 billion. So it's sort of moving towards addressing the problem. Whether that is fast enough, it's a debate for another day. But similarly, Transnet is making certain investments. At times, what one finds, though, is that where the investments are made and where the private sector needs the infrastructure is where you sometimes find a mismatch or a bit of a lag which hurts, but that's something that that government is working on. Outcomes not reflecting training. The 12 outcomes are sort of just big, high-level outcomes. But within our own programs, we run a series of training activities. There are chartered accountants who have qualified now from being trained within the Treasury, which is the training of accountants in the public sector, which is something very innovative and new that has been led by the Accountant General with support from my predecessor. Currently, we do have people, again, under the same program. So accountants, you know, finance people are people that we need. So we do have that training. But what we also train them is sort of areas of leadership, which is something that you need, because most of them get sufficient training, by the way, in areas of economics and finance sometimes in the private sector. But also beyond the Treasury, that new program, which combines all the technical support programs, it's about helping spread the reach of a training run under the auspices of the Treasury to provinces and municipalities, directly addressing the skill staff. But now, there is an issue of how far should Treasury go in doing that, because it's not quite the core business. We've realized the problem, we are addressing it or contributing towards addressing it in our way. By the way, something which touches on a question that I think the Accountant General would be best placed to answer, by the way, in terms of the municipalities that we've selected to help, which is the 42. Some of the municipalities are delegated to provinces. So provincial treasuries are supposed to do the same thing that National Treasury is doing, even if they do it with some hand-holding from National Treasury. But because they are closer to the larger numbers of the municipalities, they ought to have their own support programs in the areas of financial management so that they can support these municipalities. The increase in spending by 14%, a big part of that money is going to go to supporting research in universities, economic research, which sort of feeds into our economic policy advice and so on. The debt service costs rising with what the global financial crisis did was to force us into a situation where we ran deficits. We spent more than the revenues that we were collecting in any given year, which then meant that our total stock of debt had to be increased every year. So if you increase the stock of debt, even if you keep interest rates constant, or even if they fall a little bit, the chances are that the interest that you pay on your debt will be higher because you're working it off a bigger amount now. And that's what explains the slight increase in debt cost. What is always very important to note, without sowing seeds of complacency, though, is the fact that whilst rising both debt and debt service costs, we compare far much more favorably relative to peers and even relative to countries that were considered developed at one stage. You know, our debt to GDP will probably peak at around 40-something percent before starting to level off and fall. There are countries whose debt is well in excess of 100% of GDP, or sometimes even two times their GDP. Some of them in trouble, others not in trouble for a whole variety of reasons. So we are still okay, but we're just highlighting it as a risk. Transformation. In terms of DDGs that are responsible for running divisions in the Treasury, we've got 10. Three of them, unfortunately, two are not here now. Marion Bina is a DDG. Mahoshi is Ms. Pika Lehet, and Fundi, although in an acting capacity, they are women. Slowly, progressively, they change. I mean, it used to be only one. At one stage, was the DG, and then later on the DG and the head of corporate service. But now it's changing a bit. We're not where we should be, perhaps, but we're moving in the right direction. Yes, let me pause there and allow my colleagues to tackle some of the questions that I have.
My part has been answered by this. You thought I'll be long.
Thanks, DG Minister and Chairperson. I think the question around issues of the increased transparency, the DG has answered in relation to that information bill. The issues on capacity building, I think also the DG has answered, save to say that when we come back to report on the achievements for the past financial year, we will be talking about the work that we are doing in this area around capacity building in national and provincial departments in collaboration with DPSA. We finalized a strategy to deal with capacity building in the public sector, and you will hear more about that when we report. So there are initiatives that support the training that has to be done. The issues of the PFMA, are we satisfied with the implementation? It's an interesting question. It presupposes that perhaps there could be challenges that arise as a result of the inherent weaknesses in the PFMA necessarily. I don't think that's where the problem is around the issues of challenges in relating to financial management. I've made the statement several times that if you find, whether political or administrative leadership, that cares enough to ask questions, you will find that things begin to improve. And there are examples of that. The improvements that you will be seeing in the coming years in Home Affairs that have been realized already is an example. The improvements that of course, you still want to see more of this that have been realized in the Eastern Cape, and hopefully they can sustain them, is an example of that. So there has been, I think, a lot of positives in the implementation of the PFMA. There has been weaknesses identified, but we can't then say that the challenges that we face are a result of the weakness necessarily inherent in the legislation, but we need to look at those challenges and address them appropriately. How are we strengthening departments? I've talked about the issues of capacity building that we're doing, but also since last year, we started prioritizing specific departments that have got serious financial management challenges. And we work with these departments. We put together a team that is comprised of different disciplines within the Treasury and work with these departments. We agree on the things that we will deliver to the Treasury. We agree on the things that will be delivered by the department. And these things get signed off and they get implemented. And we will be seeing some of those benefits flowing through and seeing those departments beginning to improve in future times. The capacity building strategy, Honorable Sokoni, deals with nine disciplines, including budgeting and planning and so on. So when we address the issue of capacity building across all of the state, we will also be dealing with issues of planning and then trying to support in that area. So obviously this is one puzzle in the puzzle. You also need recruitment practices within the departments that ensure that there are people to be trained and those people are trainable. So we will do as much as we can, but also we expect that oversight in other departments would raise questions that will ensure that there's proper training, there's proper recruitment processes in those departments. I think the DG has answered the issue of the municipalities properly. There are delegated municipalities and there are municipalities that the National Treasury is responsible for. And there is work together with municipalities, with provinces, in trying to provide assistance to municipalities as well. And our capacity building initiatives also cover municipalities. I think I've covered all of the questions.
Thank you. Mine is going to be the shortest. Our shareholding in the African Development Bank currently stands at just under 4.6% of total shares. That translates roughly into just over 200,000 shares that we have in the African Development Bank. We are third in line in terms of number of shares of African member countries, after Nigeria and Egypt. And that's largely because we joined many years after the others. In terms of that shareholding that we have, we about 50% undersubscribed. So there is lots of room for us to increase our shareholding in the African Development Bank to in the region of about 9%, which will then be equivalent to the subscription in terms of our economic size. Thank you.
Just a few comments, I was, Chair, on the underspending and savings issue. I think the best way of thinking about this is to try to explain what we look for when we are identifying savings in departmental programs. What we look for is delivering services at lower cost and rationalizing on the institutional capacity of government. And so, for example, if you look at the Statistics SA chapter in the E&E, you'll see they indicate four specific things that were done to achieve savings. One was they've centralized their processing of surveys, and that has meant that they've been able to cut down on the costs of questionnaire surveying in the decentralized offices. They have put in place a set of norms and standards for office space requirements that has rationalized on their office buildings. They've invested in a fleet of vehicles, and so they've cut back on spending on hiring of cars and in Statistics SA, and actually in many departments, there have been deliberate measures taken to cut back on travel and accommodation costs and on communication costs by instituting better management of telephone costs, so least cost routing of telephone calls, and there are obviously programs and modernization of equipment that makes that possible. In Stats SA case, also there's investment in video conferencing facilities, and so they're cutting back on travel. So that's the sort of thing we look for when we're looking for savings. In some cases, there is also a rationalization of institutions. So in the housing, in the human settlements area, the Social Housing Foundation has been closed. Its functions are now performed by other institutions. Tubulisha Homes has been closed, and its functions have been transferred to other institutions, and there are savings associated with those moves. However, I should also say we're very conscious that there is underspending and underdelivery in some areas, sometimes because of unrealistic plans. And again, an example from the human settlements vote, turns out that the intent to establish a rural household infrastructure spending program managed from human settlements just wasn't realistic, and that program has been shifted to another department, or that responsibility has been shifted because of really impracticality of what had been planned, and in some cases the savings or the adjustments in numbers are as a consequence of greater realism about spending commitments. And then also, I was asked to comment on the correctional services PPP. It's important to note here, if you look at the correctional services chapter in the E&E, not everything is done through PPPs there. There are at least 8 major prison improvement programs underway that are being done through conventional procurement approaches. Our view still is, and the Department of Correctional Services sets this out in their chapter, that the PPP approach, but somewhat modified, is appropriate for at least 2 of the 4 new prisons. But you'll see from their chapter that there has been considerable modification of the approach, and involves, in broad terms, negotiation with the preferred PPP providers for a change in the balance between what the department itself will do in providing supervisory and correctional services and what the private party is undertaking to do. And really this is driven by the objective of ensuring that these projects are efficient. We've learned from the experience of the existing PPPs about what is appropriate to outsource and what is appropriate and cost-effective to retain within the department's responsibility.
Let me just conclude on a few points. Mr. Swart asked about the impact of the North African events. On the fuel side, I mean, Libya is responsible for about 2% of supply, so that doesn't explain the kind of increase that we've seen in fuel prices. And there's, we've said, and many others have said, there's strong suspicion that speculation, amongst other things, is playing a role here. And there's tremendous concern about that. On the other hand, North African events have had a positive effect because we're now democratizing societies. You're opening up new possibilities. Those countries are going to grow better, provide more competition for countries like South Africa. So we've got to wake up and be ready for that competition and outpace them in some ways, but also support the democratization processes in those countries as well. So there's more pluses than minuses. On local government, Mr. Van Rooyen said, you know, the main problem might be the funding model. From our more recent experiences, money is not always the problem or the lack of it. That there are a number of human problems that we have. Politicians who make wrong choices. Lack of planning, as you pointed out, or Mr. Sogoni pointed out. The appointment of wrong people in wrong positions. Poor procurement controls in those environments, and not undertaking the responsibility to do basic things right. You know, make sure that there's cleanliness, make sure that roads are graded in some way, and so on and so on. So in a few of the marginal rural municipalities, yes, I think the funding issue needs to be looked at. But overall, Chairperson, there's a message that if we, and we probably will have to look at this, are to allocate more funding in the equitable share to local government, then national departments must be willing to take less. In other words, the envelope is not going to change. So if we say give more to local government, then somebody's got to give, or something has to be reprioritized. And we might have to now start looking at national departments and saying, is there a way of continuing some of the things that Mr. Donaldson was talking about a lot more assertively so that we can then find the cash to go to local government. But there are a whole range of other areas that need to be improved, and some of the things that Mr. Nombaro spoke about also fits into this: building capacity, giving the right level of support, having the right level of oversight, having the provincial entities also supporting municipalities in the right way. And I think if we get that mix right, we'll have a better future for municipal structures and their delivery capacity. Those were the two issues. Thank you, Chair.
Long, yes, sir. The Commissioner's about to march.
No, I
don't know to where, but
the last
don't stage
one,
a march.
Last one, Honourable Chair, thanks. Just on ODA, I mean, the aim is to make it more transparent so that Parliament can have a better sense of it, first government and then parliament. I couldn't work out the percentages now, but it's clear that most of the jobs were created in the private sector, and the two biggest sectors between the last quarter and this one were finance and manufacturing in that order, and then others within the private sector. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Minister and the team from National Treasury. What is coming across as I sit and listen here is that we may need to probably have a different approach in terms of this presentation. We don't accord ourselves enough time, honestly speaking. And this is a very, very important presentation that we've just received. It cut across the whole government. If you just look into the aims and objectives of National Treasury, it tells you that we should try to have a different way of dealing with this presentation so that we don't lump them with the presentation from either SARS or any other institution that's related to National Treasury at the same time, unless we've got the whole day set aside to deal with these programs. In the interest of time, I will not say much in terms of my summary, Minister and Honorable Members. I think the first thing that I need to talk to is the input by the Minister, particularly around this multilateral institution, IMF and the World Bank. And I think committee members, you should probably agree with the proposal that I'm going to make. Because it's a cross-cutting issue, it's not just a matter that is resident in the Finance Committee. Allow us to interact with the chairpersons of other committees, particularly in the economic cluster, before the end of today. I'll find a way so that we can jointly issue a statement that the committee has advocated in terms of saying, one, as a committee or parliament, we need to actually encourage our government to take this matter as a government issue, probably a matter that needs to be dealt with at intergovernmental levels within the continent. But from our side as a parliament, I think as a committee, we also need to put a motion in parliament for the debate on this matter. Encourage also Pan-African Parliament and Commonwealth to take a common position in supporting the proposal that would be putting forward as a Committee on Finance and the Parliament of the Republic, basically saying what Honorable Spidla raised earlier on, to say we are an interested party of South Africa, we need to consult with other countries within the continent to support our position. So that is something that is concrete, if Honorable Members agree to that. Agreed? On the presentation itself, Honorable Minister, I think the issue of central procurement is long overdue. In fact, I think we started well in 1994 up until we then had a plethora of bid committees all over. I think National Treasury needs to build capacity within itself to begin to look into these issues, particularly big infrastructure projects. I will give an example. I was in China with the speaker and went to the Great Hall. Massive infrastructure put together in eight months, from conceptualization to usage. And I said to the speaker, probably there was no tender issued here.
because for the 8 months in South Africa, we'll be still changing bid terms. 18 months would pass without actually doing what they're supposed to do. I don't know how we managed to do it in the World Cup, during the World Cup. That is becoming impossible for us to actually implement the same methods. Now, I think National Treasury needs to put its foot down and assist in this regard. Otherwise, the 5 million jobs that we're talking about, it's not just issues of skills. I do hear that we continue to say there's a mismatch and lack of skills in the economy. In other countries where these economies are growing at 7-6% in China, it's not just a question of skills, it's the willpower for people to do things. So let's not continue to look for reasons why we cannot do certain things. Skills, yes. It's not just a question of resources. Yes, it's a problem. But I think, as you always say, Minister, it's the will to implement. And I think that's where we're lacking. So I thought the central procurement and the regulations that you're talking about, as the committee, we need to support you fully and make sure that we move in that regard. I was sent to the Minister of Economic Development yesterday that the number of people who are supposed to be economically active, if you move during the day in Pretoria, in Durban, in Johannesburg, you can simply say the number of people inside buildings are less than the number of people in the streets. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to see how many people are there and idly. And these are the people with energy that needs to be put to the correct usage. Service delivery protest, amongst others, is the high levels of unemployment in the country. You've got a ready-made core of people who can actually do anything that you ask them to do in the townships, in the villages, at any given moment of our time. So the creation of jobs for us, it is very, very critical. And I think resource allocation and monitoring of how those resources are actually deployed is the responsibility of National Treasury, and of course ourselves, we need to help in that regard. I was looking at the amount of debt or borrowing, 500 and something million. And you have said in your input, we should borrow for investment, not for consumption. It will be important for this committee, perhaps at some point, to receive information in terms of where this money is actually going, so that we can be able to monitor throughout government. Assist in making sure that it is indeed for investment, not for consumption. The 30 billion rand savings, it may tell you one story or the other. It's real savings, it's budget gaming at the same time. Where was the money there before? Why did you have to take Treasury to go and discover that this money can be a saving, sitting in other departments? So I think those are the issues that we really need to look into. On infrastructure, the 800 billion or so, or 800 billion. I think one of the things that, as you look into centralizing procurement, National Treasury Minister in particular, is the renewal of the inner cities. The cities that I'm talking about, Durban, Pretoria, Johannesburg, and others, they are actually disintegrating. If you look at Pretoria as the capital city of South Africa, what plan is there? And it cuts across provincial, national, and local, particularly the metro itself. What plan do we have to revive these cities? Otherwise, we'll end up having no cities, but having your mainlands, your sentence outside the main infrastructure that you're supposed to maintain. For lack of time, I think, let me just pause here, Minister. We'll take a break of about 5 minutes and allow the presentation from the Commissioner of SARS to commence, and we'll see how we manage time around those issues. I believe the ministers are going to be with us. Thank you.
I can't find a way to do it.